Hi, I'm Spider Robinson. Welcome to Thrillin' at the Macmillan, a series of 8 essays about space and space travel that I wrote during my term as the first writer-in-residence for the H.R. Macmillan Space Center in Vancouver, British Columbia, with assistance from the Canada Council for the Arts. These essays were posted over a 9-month period at the Space Center's website, www.hrmacmillanspacecenter.com, and I'll be reading them aloud for you in this podcast series. These essays are podcast under Creative Commons license, with the conditions no derivatives, non-commercial, and share alike. Thrillin' at the Macmillan, number 4. They should have made a pile of 'em. Copyright 2006 by Spider Robinson. To my surprise, not even the wonderful wizard of Google can pin down exactly when the militarization of space became unstoppable. In the first place, China's finally sussed out the secret to the information age. Smother it with so much contradictory information nobody can say for sure just what you said or when, much less why. And they've always known what to do about military information. Lie. Pin me down, I'll say no later than 1999. At Expo 2000 in Hanover, the centerpiece of the Chinese pavilion was a display of 2 Chinese taikonauts planting the flag of the People's Republic on the moon. By October, Shuang Fagan, VP of the China Association of Sciences, was talking to reporters about a permanent lunar base. He even bothered to invent a nearly plausible scientific reason for one. But we can safely guess when the President of the United States first noticed that the militarization of space was underway and responded. I think I can pin it down to within a minute or two. Based on his known performance when the Twin Towers fell, I make it roughly 14 minutes after China's announcement before he told someone to write the speech he delivered on January 14, 2004, in which he finally got around to telling us all of his deep and abiding lifelong interest in manned space exploration, which he'd neglected to mention over the last few decades, and especially in a manned lunar base that will achieve important scientific goals he hasn't had time to name to this day, what with one Iraq and another. That is, over 3 years after the People's Republic progressed from unmistakable hints to bald admission of its own intent to establish one. That's how long it took for some anonymous hero in America's armed forces to get past the civilian morons currently misrunning all military matters and explain to Mr. Bush that an actual war with enemies that really exist and could actually hurt America has been in progress on his watch since well before September 11th. And he's losing. I'm not talking about the anti-satellite technology China demonstrated recently, to the horror of white people, by blowing up one of its own satellites with a missile fired from the ground, although that's demonstrably better than the U.S. can do after decades of Star Wars funding. Naturally, the American media have decried this weaponization of space, this more successful than theirs weaponization, I mean. Few mention that way back in the midst of 2002, China and Russia together formally asked for a treaty banning weaponization of space, and not only did W tell him to take a hike, he declared last August, America has the right to use space for defense and intelligence gathering purposes, unquote, as well as to stop adversaries, unquote, who use space in any way it finds threatening, if it ever figures out how. Forget that. Let's just grant China undeniably superior missile technology and admit that it, too, will soon be stopping adversaries who use Earth orbit in ways that threaten it. The worst missiles can do, after all, is carry nuclear weapons, and nukes are nothing. High orbit's the wrong battleground. A feint. Let's talk about the really dangerous weapons of this century. Moon rocks. Let's play a game. Imagine you're the undisputed Olympic gold medal champion rock thrower of all time. You can put a rock in each eye of a challenger 50 meters away faster than he can throw one every time. Let's even say you have as many rocks of your favorite throwing size and mass as you could possibly want close to hand. You're facing a rock fight with a blindfolded, prepubescent girl who's never been in a fight of any kind before, and though she has many rocks, they're hard for her to even lift. Will you bet your life and your family's on the outcome? Oh, I forgot. You're at the bottom of a 100-meter well. She's at the top. That's what it's like to fight a global war against a single platoon who are on the moon. They perch, it doesn't matter how precariously, at the top of a very deep gravity well. One so honkin' deep that all they need are rocks, steel to wrap them in, and an induction catapult to fling them over the edge of the well with a degree of accuracy, and they own the world beneath them. Robert A. Heinlein explained the math over 40 years ago in his classic novel, The Moon is a Harsh Mistress, which depicted a lunar penal colony winning independence with rocks. By the time they reached the bottom of the well, each carried kinetic energy equivalent to a nuclear weapon, but without all that nasty radiation contaminating the conquered territory for centuries. Think the nuclear arms race was harsh? Wait till you see the lunar rock race. The Apollo astronauts picked up a total of 381.69 kilograms, 841.6 pounds, of lunar rocks, and brought them home at a cost of $24 billion. Call it $15,285 Canadian a kilo, $28,500 U.S. a pound. The ghost of Korolev alone knows how many quintillion rubles the USSR spent, but they barely got their money's worth, a whopping 139 grams of moon rock. Even God doesn't know why either side did it. Of that combined grand total, less than 20 kilos have been given to scientists, 35,000 of them, and 5 to museums for public viewing and even touching. The other 357 kilos have been filed forever in that warehouse you saw at the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark. They've also lost, I swear this is true, the actual footage of Armstrong stepping onto the surface. Fewer than a dozen people ever saw it. The best image you or anyone else has ever seen is a TV broadcast conversion with the relative quality of a 10th-generation photocopy. If they ever do locate the original, a true Lost Ark long shot, there's one machine left in all the world that can play it, and one man who knows how to keep it running so far, and he's retired. So help me. Right stuff my foot. Right now, Russia's much closer to landing men on the moon than America. It still makes a rocket powerful enough. China's is better. Believe it or not, America burned the plans for theirs to save storage costs years ago. They're currently scurrying around trying to find young engineers who grew up reading science fiction instead of Harry Potter, without much luck. The kids in my neighborhood were smarter than either the U.S. or USSR. Believe me, we knew what to do with rocks. And if the best fighting rocks had cost us $28,500 a pound, we'd have done the same thing, made a big pile of them on high ground, left it there, and hid behind it with one in each hand. Ancient China, heir to the military wisdom of Sun Tzu, advanced to the tactical sophistication of my buddies and me at least 7 years ago. Even President Bush League caught up 3 years ago. The media, mighty with money and the latest high-tech tools, are finally gearing up to cover a desert war with no point or end that's been going on since W. took office before 9/11. The weaponization of space already happened, has been in progress for years, and news nitwits are just beginning to realize it's a theoretical possibility worth mild concern once we settle really important matters like whether Sunnis or Shiites produce worse psychotics. Heinlein also said 40 years ago that progress in space is inevitable, but there's no guarantee the working language will be English. Smart cobber. BC writer Spider Robinson's 33rd book, Variable Star, a collaboration with Robert A. Heinlein, is available from Tor Books. For further information, visit www.spiderrobinson.com or www.variablestarbook.com. This has been Thrillin' at the Macmillan No. 4, the fourth in a series of 8 essays about space and space travel, written during my term as first writer-in-residence for the H.R. Macmillan Space Center in Vancouver, British Columbia, with assistance from the Canada Council for the Arts. Some relevant links can be found at the Space Center's website, www.hrmacmillanspacecenter.com. Thanks for falling by. I hope you'll come back for the rest of the essays. This is Spider Robinson, still thrilling at the Macmillan. PayPal or Visa donations are most welcome. Just click the link on the podcast page at my website.